Welcome to In the Fieldhouse with Coach Jim and Coach Carrie, episode number 7.
Yup. Lucky number 7.
Lucky number 7.
Whoa. Remember that movie? I kind of do.
That was a good time.
It was a good time.
Actually, I really don't remember.
No, I just remember Josh Hartnett was in it, and at that time, he was a dreamboat.
Always my dreamboat. Love you, Josh Hartnett.
Wow.
Just kidding.
Kiss, kiss. Wow. I actually heard he was in something recently.
Really?
As a man.
Really?
Well, I mean, yeah, because he's older now.
Well, I understand that, but I just didn't think. I didn't think he was anything more. More importantly, I think we've already started. It's important that the last 6 episodes or so have been a little heavy.
Yeah, a little heavy, man. A little heavy, and, you know, I'll do heavy, but I like light.
Yeah, and I think we, you know, put a little comedy in there, and we make each other laugh. But I think maybe we need to
get off the mood,
get off the gas a little, and have a little fun with this episode.
Cruise, baby.
So I think for this episode, we're gonna do an entire episode of just hot takes.
Hot takes, baby.
Hot takes.
Jambalaya.
A couple of mine are warm, like warm takes.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not super hot.
But I have 2 very hot takes. One that is going to send you through the roof.
Dude, Jim Tarrow. So I was making my hot takes in the dining room. He was circling the dining room table like a vulture, ready for prey. Like a shark. And I'm just like, it building my anxiety. I'm just trying to finish my stuff up. And he is on me like white on rice.
Bonus
hot. Squawking about how proud and excited he is.
Bonus hot take right now.
Oh my God.
And I'm just going to put this out here. Carrie and I have very different views on meals and their timing. I am a firm believer as to when you eat the particular meal is what meal it is.
You have to explain that because it sounds like
hang on.
Do it.
Relax. We're getting there.
Get there.
So if you eat in the morning, that's breakfast. If you eat in the afternoon, that's lunch. And if you eat at night, that's dinner. That's my take.
Which is erroneous. My perspective is the first meal you eat, whether you eat it in before 12 p.m. or after, is breakfast. The first meal you eat is breakfast.
Okay.
The second meal you eat is lunch. Third meal you eat is dinner.
All right, clatter claps. Keep it down.
I'm going to clap it away because I have firm opinions on this. And listen, this is coming up because Jim Tarrow, it is 9:16 a.m. at the moment of this podcast. He is drinking Coke Zero. Coke Zero. Coca-Cola at 9:16 a.m. I'm sorry. Coke is not a morning drink. And he will order it with his breakfast at a breakfast place. No. At lunch and after. You want to drink your Coke Zero? By all means. It is Coke Zero time. But prior to 12 p.m., I can't.
Yeah, so if we have a lazy Sunday, which doesn't happen often, but maybe in the winter, we have a lazy Sunday day, and we don't go out for our first meal, I'll call it, until say 11 or 12 o'clock. To me, that's lunchtime.
That's,
but according to Carrie, it is breakfast.
It's breakfast. I'm sorry. It's breakfast. I cannot start the day with a meatball sub and a Coke Zero, Jim Tarrow. I'm sorry. I can't. Like, it just doesn't compute.
Hey.
And honestly, and when you get it, it bothers me.
Yeah, she's bothered. God.
That's it. I'm not bothered by many things that other people do.
I don't even think any of my hot takes can get you this hot, but apparently.
This might be the hottest I am the entire episode.
Love it. Oh. All right. So let us know in an email, comments, maybe smoke signals, how you feel about when the timing of certain, you know.
I know the emails have been flowing in, guys.
Just so, flowing.
I just can't keep up with all the fan mail.
I know. Yeah, me too.
So
anyways. All right. So we're going to go into, you want to go first with the hot take?
No, you can go first. You're very excited.
All right. This one actually may have a little bit of debate to it. All right. Kids need more tough love, or same kind of trope. Kids are too soft today.
Oh, yeah, that's good, dude.
So this came up because I watched a video of a coach online, and he was screaming at his kids on the sideline. And he's like, why are you making me do this? You know, why are you making me coach like this? You know, I hate coaching like this. I hate watching bad basketball. It was a basketball thing. And I watched it and I thought to myself, like, well, then don't, first off. And second, the kids kind of seemed turned off to it. And then I read in the comments, and the comments were evenly split. Half the people were like, yes, kids need more of this. This is how you're supposed to coach. This shows passion, blah, 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 blah. And then half the other comments were, this is exactly what not to do. Your kids are not listening to you and they're not learning anything. So I just thought it was an interesting topic and certainly worth something to talk about.
No, listen, dude, I didn't think you were going to come out that hard. Good for you. Oh, yeah. Good for you. That's why you were circling me in the dining room.
If you think that's hot.
Oh, my wait. God. Oh, the eyes. I wish this should be... We need cameras in here. I'm going to start with my soapbox that if you're eliciting those kids, and it depends on the sport, but basketball, for example, basketball is fast paced, baby, fast paced. If you're encouraging them to take focus off of the game and look at you and respond, or if they feel like they have to.
This was during a timeout, by the way.
Oh, well, you just took my soapbox away. It's just you can have, honestly, you can be loud. It depends on what you're saying. You know, that's sure. It. Like, elicit some kind of emotional excitement and share your passion and get them passionate too, but not, you can't come from a place of beating them down. You know, you really can't. It's not going to be helpful. And not all kids react that way. Maybe your kid knows not to take that to heart. But not all kids do.
Yeah, yeah.
So the other kid in the team is going to look at that and be like, oh, he's really mad. When your kid is like, no, he's passionate. There's too many different perspectives on the field with those kids they won't all understand how you work.
Yeah. I feel that yelling is just like any other tool of communication. And that is, it is a tool.
It's a tool.
And if it is used very sparingly and it is used in moments of, like, a safety concern, sure, 100%,
absolutely.
If it is used at like a very critical moment, it has its place. And yeah, I think we've certainly gotten softer, if you will, as time has gone on.
Yeah, but part of it is too, is it because we now know more?
That's exactly where I was going. We know more. We know how people handle things, and we know certain kids, you start yelling and they just shut right down.
Boop. Dude, nope. And they don't hear you. All they do, they look at your face, they see that you're angry, they see that you're loud, and all they want to do is please you, but they don't know how to do it
right, and they're just going to yes you to death to make you stop yelling.
I mean, there's been a time, and even with kids, and I'm not yelling, but I'll be talking to them and I know they're not processing what I'm saying because they're overwhelmed already.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to find a way to get to them in a way that they're going to be able to open up and really try to process what you're saying.
Yeah.
And with yelling, the more you yell, the less it becomes effective.
Sure.
It's as simple as that.
Yep. And that's why I'm saying use it sparingly as a tool.
Yeah.
All right. That's my first hot take.
Yeah, so bottom line, yelling all the time, not going to be working.
Nope.
It's not going to work.
If you're yelling all the time, it just becomes background noise.
Mm-hmm.
Kids aren't listening.
No, they're not. I'm going to tell you, as a kid myself, I will tell, not right now, at one point in my life when I was a kid. As a child myself. No. as a kid, when I was a kid, if someone's yelling at me, I'm just trying to please you because I see your body language is telling me everything I need to know.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. I know that I was like that as a kid, and I know that I see that in the kids I have now.
Sure.
So, again, it's as a tool. It is not as an everyday, every moment of the game thing. And not only that, as a parent, I don't want my kid on your team.
Mm.
You're going to drive people away. So,
but you know what? And this is the sidebar. There are some parents that want that, that okay. think that that's what's necessary. And you know what? If that's what you need,
go find it.
My team is not for you.
My team is not for you. Nope. You're going to get very frustrated with me because I'm not going to give you whatever you want.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, all right.
Yeah. Now it's up. Now it's up to you. You got hot take number one for you.
I do. Ready? Baseball is boring.
Whoa. Okay. I didn't see you coming with a real hot take.
That's it, baby.
Okay. You know what's funny? I was having this discussion with someone the other day about the difference between baseball and softball. Mm-hmm. And I explained how much more fast-paced softball is. Mm-hmm. At, you know, specifically at a higher level. Obviously, some of the lower levels, it's like...
Yeah, it's different. Well, yeah. Until the pitchers learn how to pitch.
Until the pitchers can pitch, you know, consistently strikes and batters can hit consistently.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Baseball can be really boring. I think it's a different watching experience than softball. It's a different watching experience than other sports in that you're not gripped on the edge of your seat for an hour because a baseball game's like 17 and a half hours long.
Wow! There's your answer right there, people. There it is right there.
So... I agree and disagree. I don't know. It can be boring to watch, and I think that's why you're seeing declining
numbers.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm going to be real too. Too many games.
Oh yeah, you're saying for the pros. Yeah.
Yeah, like 100%. There's just too many games. You know, like football season, how many of the games do they have a football season? 16.
Well, 18 actually.
Oh, there you go. 18. Are you including preseason? Is that why?
Didn't they go to an 18 game season now?
Either way, like how do you go from hundreds of games and then 18?
Because
like,
they can sell the stadium out.
Yeah.
Or but, some can.
Yeah. Well, that's, I just don't. And again, I'm talking about, I mean, softball is my favorite female sport. So baseball is going to be my favorite male sport because I understand it better, but it's a lot of games, man. And even with the pitch clock, I'm like, I don't know if that really did it. To make it, you know, like, I mean, there's more controversy around it, but I don't know if it really made it that much more captivating for audiences.
Yeah. I don't know how much that moved the needle. That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Your turn.
Okay. All right. this is a warm take.
Okay.
But this is a personal soapbox of mine. Music is underutilized in youth sports.
Oh, wow. Should have seen that one coming a mile away. The question's not for me. That question's for you. You asked that question for you.
It's not even a question. It's a statement.
Okay, you stated that for you.
I stated it because what I'm trying to say is we need to stop having pre-games and post games and half times without music. There's no reason why we should be sitting on a soccer field having conversations when we can have sweet music bopping.
Honestly, would that calm the masses?
That's what I'm saying.
Do you think? Listen, music brings the people together, baby.
That's where I'm going.
Wow,
it's gonna calm people, especially basketball. Come on.
You know exactly how to get me going. You know it. You know basketball, the air is thick.
The air is thick. And how do we cut that? Right? Yeah, exactly. And we cut that air with sweet bops.
Honestly, get those sweet bops. Get those siblings in dancing and people aren't going to be upset anymore.
No one's mad. No one's mad.
Get the little siblings in.
The little kid starts dancing at half court because, you know, Bruno Mars is on.
Or whatever it is. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should, right. We need the
music. Honestly, bring dance competitions into it.
I'm all
you're
for
so,
it.
Oh, yeah, that's it. You're so ready. Listen, you got coaches.
Yeah.
You got coaches, you got players, you need DJs. Simple as that.
It's an integral part of the game.
This is the time for your plug, Jim Taylor.
Yeah. My plug?
Your softball DJ plug.
Oh, I am. Me, my boy Justin Rosera, we are softball DJs.
That's it.
We are the most electrifying duo in softball entertainment, if I do say so myself. And, I mean, we keep the people going in between games.
We've had umpires dancing.
Umpires dancing. There is nothing better than when you get the umpire dancing because you know that guy's having a good time. Normally, he's scared he's going to get yelled at by parents. Now, he's like, this is a great time.
That's it. Loosey-goosey.
This is now I'm having fun. And that's what all these sports are supposed to be, is fun.
Yeah, that's it. And honestly, when that umpire was dancing, the parents were excited. The kids were excited. Everyone stopped talking about this high-intensity game.
That's what I'm saying.
Dude, I didn't think I was going to be that passionate about your little statement there.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Wow. Wow. All right.
All right, what you got?
Okay, Jim Tarrow. The NCAA should not have allowed college athletes to get paid for their name, image, likeness.
Completely disagree.
Yo!
1,000% disagree.
Laying it down.
Yeah.
All right. Why do you disagree? Throw it at us.
Because as a high-level D1 athlete, you do not have time to have a job.
Mm-hmm. So that's your job.
That is your job. So, one, how do you make money? And two, you have colleges that are profiting millions off some of these athletes.
Yeah. I mean, amen. Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark.
Quite obvious this year.
And so how would it be fair? How is it fair whatsoever that...
Well, Teddy disagrees. Teddy has something
Teddy is... Our dog upstairs is very much disagreeing.
He does not like your opinion, Jim Tarrow.
Oh, either that or he is very passionate about Caitlin Clark and or the mailman. We don't know who it could
be. Listen, we don't know. Maybe she's dressed as a mailman right now.
Amazon man.
Gonna get you in your Amazon man.
It's got to be the Amazon man. Anyways, I think it's just you have – Caitlin Clark's a perfect example. She's selling out stadiums – Everywhere she went, away games, doesn't matter, selling out stadiums. How is it fair that everyone else gets to profit on what she is doing and she's left with nothing?
Goose eggs.
Especially when coming into the WNBA, which is now the controversy, and we're not going to go into this, but yes, her starting salary is $75,000 a year.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. All right. All right, that's your perspective. Honestly, I agree, because let's look at it.
You disagree with your own hot take. I love it.
I do disagree with my own hot take. I disagree with all of them. I actually don't think baseball is that boring. Well, anyways. But no, I do disagree with that hot take, because think of how, like, everyone's been profiting off of that. It's not, like, not just Caitlin Clark, but also it's, again, she has no time. She has no, and you don't, her background, I mean, her parents might not have the money to be sending her where she is right now. Yeah. You know? So, like, it's not like they can sit there and funnel more money at her. They're paying enough just to be there. Or she might not be paying at all. But still, athletes in general.
You want my hot take based on your hot take?
Serve it up hot.
There should be no college sports. Except for intramural.
You're just going off the deep end. No more Coke Zero in the morning. You're nuts. You're out of control. I can't even deal. Just do the next one. I'm not even going to go that. All
right, we'll just leave that alone.
We might revisit it. I don't know.
We'll revisit. When selecting for a team, the family matters just as much, if not more, than the kid.
Yeah. Okay. That's 100% true. It's 100% true. I learned that lesson. I've known it and I've learned it for a long time. I shouldn't say learned it for a long time. I have continually learned this throughout my years, and that's absolutely true.
Mm.
Because it all depends on the kid's support system. And honestly, it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier about what kind of coach do you want? what kind of coach do you, if you have a family that thinks that tough love is the only way to give love, then I can't have that, because that's not the way that I run.
Yeah.
You know, or at least not the tough love that people think it is. You know, like I'm not going to berate a kid if you think that's the way that coaching should be. Not going to be your favorite. And I don't want, and the biggest thing is, I don't want to have to apologize for who I am and how I coach, because the way that I've coached, I know, is successful. I've learned from people that coach the way that I coach and have been successful, and I've been successful in my own right. So it's absolutely just as important. I need parents that are going to be dedicated. They're going to support their kids. They're going to support our team, and they're going to contribute to a healthy team culture. And if you got that one bad apple, baby, that whole bunch is going to be ruined. And for real, we've seen it.
Yeah.
So, well, amen. Amen.
Oh, I know.
One more. But hallelujah.
I wanted to back this up, because this is not controversial to you and I. You and I both agree 1,000% on this. But to people listening, this may be something controversial. They may think that's unfair to the kid. It's, you know, it's not based on the kid's merit, whatever. I'm just going to kind of back up a little. When you kind of hit all the points. When you're putting someone on your team, let's start with the absolute basics. The kid has to be able to consistently get to practices and games. If you have a parent that has a lot of stuff going on, they got a few jobs, whatever, and you know, they're uninterested in the sports and they don't really care, and then all of a sudden the kid's missing half the practices, missing half the games. All of a sudden it's like, well, that kid's going to fall behind, first off.
Yep.
And second, they're not really ingrained into the team.
Yep.
Right? So from just a literal administrative point, you have to have a parent that's with you. And then as you move up, like you said, if the parent disagrees with the way you coach, it's going to be a bad time for both of you.
Yep.
They're going to think that their kid's not being coached correctly. You're going to have friction with them. You're going to have friction between you and the kid, because the kid's hearing something different from the parent than they're hearing from you.
Mm-hmm.
And
at the end of the day, you can't fight what happens at home.
You can't.
You can't. And I'm going to be honest with you. I learned that as a teacher, and I've seen it. I learned it as a coach as well.
Mm.
I only have them for 4 hours in practice. That's it. You have them the rest of the time. As a parent, you have them the rest of the time. And not only that, the stakes are higher if they don't agree with their parent.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, you don't agree with me, you're going to sit.
Right.
But you don't agree with your parent, you are not living, they're not living in a safe environment. They don't feel safe. Their hierarchy of needs is not stable.
Ooh,
you like that?
What up, Maslow?
What's up, bro? It's not stable. They don't feel safe, and then they don't feel like their needs are going to be met. So it's as simple as that. I mean, I can't fight the parents, and I won't fight the parents, because I understand that it's just something that I'm going to lose.
Oh yeah, 100% of the time. So I think what this is for people who are like considering going on to like a competitive select travel, whatever organization team, it's important that you are a good fit,
mm-hmm.
as like that your ideals fit with the coach and the organization, because you're going to be spending a lot of time together.
Yep.
Your kid's going to be spending a lot of time with that team. Mm-hmm. And if you guys are on different sides of, for example, the kids are too soft argument, if you're on different sides of that argument, it's going to be a bad time for everybody.
Move on.
So
move on,
find something that, you know, is a better fit for what you're looking for as far as time commitment, as far as ideals, as far as, you know, meritocracy, whatever.
And I have to jump in on time commitment too. I have to jump in on that.
Sure.
So if your child and or my player isn't showing up, you put the coach in a difficult situation because of this. Yes, you've paid to be there. So has everyone else. Your kid might be really good, but they don't know what's going on in the field because we're developing strategy and they're not there. And also, in any other situation, and I know specifically from coaching high school, coaching in across the board, if your kid's not showing up, they don't earn playing time.
Mm.
And a big part of this tough love is if you show up, you get what you sow. You reap what you sow. You're going to be able to get in. If you don't show up, you're not earning that playing time. So then when it comes time to decide who's on the field, your kid might be a better athlete, but there might be another kid out there who's been here, who knows the plays. So at that time, as a coach, what's going to benefit our team more? The kid that's that's athletically better, or the kid that is more in tune with what we're doing as a team? I say that sometimes it's one or the other, but if you're there, especially if your kid's that one that's the athlete and they're there, they're the first pick every time.
Mm-hmm.
They're the first pick every time. And then that other kid that's there all the time but might not be the best athlete is A, going to creep up on that other kid just by showing up, and then B, is earning their stripes.
Mm, love it.
Simple as that.
Love it. And that actually, I'm just going to hijack an additional hot take. Literally, my next hot take was, never mind. I actually took that out. I had a hot take in there about how playing time is earned even at a rec level.
Oh,
but
that's good.
But in as you move up in the competitive world, you know, a lot of that earning is based on meritocracy. So based on how well you do and how good you are. But even at a rec level, it's based on showing up.
Showing up, baby. So I can think of so many stories that this kid, you know, this athlete was breakout just because they showed up.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And you have to teach your kid that.
Yeah.
You have to teach your kid that it's important to show up.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. All right.
Is it my turn for that?
It's your turn, yeah.
Oh. Parents should not be allowed to coach school sports teams.
We could do a whole episode on this.
We could do a whole episode on this.
Maybe next episode.
Maybe.
But I'm just going to open it up by saying that's ridiculous.
Whoa, what's ridiculous?
To say they shouldn't be allowed to coach.
Oh, throw it at me, baby.
Oh man, I don't want to kill a whole episode, but all right. Daddy ball.
Yo.
As it is often called.
Mm-hmm. Is it called that in other sports?
Yeah.
Cool.
For sure. Daddy ball is one, a necessity.
All right.
Because you have two choices. You can go play your $80, $100 a year league, $60 a year league, whatever it is, and essentially not pay for a coach. Mm-hmm. Or you can pay for a coach.
Yeah.
And that's going to cost you $3,000 a year.
Yeah.
To be on that team.
Hold on. Didn't you just say $80,
$100? $80 or $100 a year.
Or $100. Okay. Yeah. I'm like, dude, that's $8,000.
$800.
I was like, damn, that's expensive, dude.
But my point is, if you don't pay for a coach, you have leagues that are more accessible to more people, which is what rec is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Or even in, you know, in travel and
you're walking away from my question, though.
Yeah, but isn't your question that parents shouldn't be coaching?
No. It's not.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed
it. Parents should not be coaching school teams.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right. Get on board, Jim Tarrow.
School teams. Okay. Wow. That's an interesting one.
All right. Well, now that your ears are open, all that Coke Zero, you're jumping right to what you thought I was saying.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. It's that caffeine.
Yeah, I probably agree with that.
Wow, straight up. You were about ready to walk down. You just got your podium.
And I say that because You know what? I don't necessarily totally agree. I think it very much depends on the particular coach.
Okay.
I think there are certain coaches that can do that really well as a paid coach and can basically put their feelings aside and do that great separation of coach and parent.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also requires a strong second parent in order to be a coach that can do that. And I, as long as that coach is fair and can do that, I think it works.
Okay. I am going to give my own hot take and I'm going to say N-O.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. And this is the thing. I'm sure, and I'm saying this, you know, locally, but I'm sure sometimes there's no choice, you know. I'm sure there's not. And if you have a coach who has been at that school for, you know, so many years and their kid happens to come up into the program, well, okay. I understand that. Like, don't, right. You shouldn't boot someone because of that. However, if you have an option between a parent and a non-parent, the non-parent should have the opportunity before the parent.
I agree with you in that. I was thinking about it, like if you had the first example you gave, which is if you had someone who was a coach for a while and their kid came up through, should this person step down? No, I don't think so.
No.
As long as they are a competent coach and can separate that.
Yeah, I just feel like as a school administration, as an AD, I feel like you are inviting a lot of problems when you have a parent whose kid is plays that sport and is coaching that.
Yeah,
you're asking for a lot of problems.
I would agree. But I also know that sometimes it's really difficult to get coaches depending on the sport. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of just left with what you got sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, so that's true. But I feel like administration, you're asking for a lot of problems. For the kids in general, you can only assume if you don't make a team, it's because this person, you know, because you didn't go to that kid's birthday party or because that girl doesn't like you. So therefore, they're not going to take you on that team or that boy.
Yeah.
Either way, I feel like there's too many political things that could be in the way to have parents coaching school ball, unless, again, it's someone that's been chronically doing it.
Yeah. Fair.
So.
Okay. All right.
Yep. Your turn.
Oh, this one won't be controversial. I don't think it'll be controversial to you, but there's some people out there that this might be real controversial to. So I said we're going to have a light episode, but now we're getting controversial.
God, the light in his eyes.
This is my favorite one though. I think they should remove fighting from hockey, or allow the kids to fight.
Oh, God. Oh, first of all, everyone, you should know most of these hot takes we've already talked about ad nauseum. Honestly, you know, I don't think they should be able to fight. And I say that, mind you, we were watching hockey the other day, or a couple months ago. The only time I was interested is when they were fighting.
Yeah, yeah. You were
literally shoving popcorn in my mouth.
Oh, look at them fighting.
Watch number 10.
But here's my thought. You have kids that look up to these professional athletes.
Uh-huh.
And they're just like, that's what I want to do. And in every other sport, that's what they can do. But you're allowing... And I understand the whole idea behind fighting, which is you're essentially allowing the players on the ice to kind of self-police some of the etiquette and things that maybe aren't caught by refs. And I understand that's the perspective. And I understand that. That's been explained to me when I've come out with this hot take in front of other people before. But it doesn't change the fact that what kids see is
what they were going to do.
Something's not going right. And then all of a sudden there's two players fighting on the ice and the refs are holding people back, letting them fight.
Yep.
So, and I totally understand that maybe that's part of the game. And if that's part of the game, then the kids should be able to do it too.
Oh, stop it. Stop it. Oh my God.
Maybe the kids have to keep their gloves on. I don't know how you wanna all do right. it.
Jim Tarrow. This is when you get canceled. This is it. Episode 7.
Promoting children fighting.
This is it. Episode 7. We had a good run, people. We had a good run.
To be 100% clear, I don't promote kids fighting. What I do promote is getting rid of fighting in hockey. However, I'm just saying you can't be on both sides of that ball. You either got to be against fighting or for fighting for everyone.
I can't. Do I justify this with any more of a hot take? Oh, my God. Listen, I'm sorry. I love the fighting personally, but I know it's wrong. It's a car crash that I'm going to watch. It's as simple as that. Yeah. So I'm going to end this conversation with saying that I do not promote the fighting at any level.
All right. Okay. All right.
Can't believe you brought that up. Wow. Oh, God. All right. I got to find my hot takes. Here they are. Here it is. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin Clark is underpaid as a WNBA player.
0% chance.
Throw it at us, Jim Tarrow.
Caitlin Clark is paving the way for all future WNBA players to be paid a lot more. She's entering into an agreement between the players and the league that has already existed due to the fact that league has lost money year over year over year for its entire existence.
How does it even exist then?
Because the NBA pumps money into it every year.
Really?
Yes. It loses $10 to $12 million per year. Versus you have the NBA making hundreds of millions per year. So it's losing money. So you have, and what it comes down to is just selling tickets, whether that's online.
Well, we know she can do that.
Well, whether that's online, whether that's in person, the answer to solving the problem of her not being paid enough is selling tickets, which she can do.
She's already doing.
She's doing for games. We have tickets to go see her in Connecticut.
Hello.
Which she's doing. But the league is going to see the money first, and then they need to renegotiate their player contract. And she's going to make it up, obviously. I think she is going to set records in sponsorships that beyond what male players see.
Yo.
I think she's going to change how the WNBA potentially is structured, how they're paid. I think you might see kind of a revenue share type situation. I don't know, but I know that what she is doing is groundbreaking and it's changing everything.
I think she should get paid more for it.
And she is.
But she's not.
Okay. All right.
I get what you're saying. And honestly, very well put. You know, and I've said this to you before, she signed about a 5-year contract, five-year. Mm-hmm. And I know she can negotiate her contract right within that 5 years or no.
Sure. You can always negotiate it.
Oh, 5 years, dude. It's like, girl, you're already like, there's already evidence of her putting money in all these other people's pockets. Like, it just kills me how much is she making again? You remember?
75,000
per year.
Yeah.
I made more than that as a teacher.
Sure.
Which, I mean, I'm going to say, my job was not easy.
No?
My job was not easy. However, like, why was I making more than Caitlin Clark?
Here. All right, women, you want to solve the problem? Watch the game.
Oh.
That's it. The WNBA has a viewership issue.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, this is my other soapbox.
This is my question, okay? Sit down from your soapbox for a second.
Okay.
Is WNBA as accessible to watch as it is NBA?
No.
No. So women need to subscribe to fancy.
But that's because nobody wants to watch it, because when it is televised, nobody watches it.
Hmm.
So the WNBA has a league pass that you can watch every game all year for $37. You want to support the WNBA? You want to support women's rights? Go buy it. You want the WNBA to get bigger? You want Caitlin Clark to be paid more? Go to a game. Buy your jersey. That's how you support it. Or WNBA, if you're listening, I don't know why you would be, but if you are.
Listen, we are pretty big deal.
But WNBA, if you're listening, meet women where they are. Women aren't going to sit down and watch a whole game.
No.
Let's face it.
I'm sorry. I am a sports fan, and I would love to do what you're saying, but I am doing, I can't. I mean, maybe I can throw it on my phone while I'm doing laundry or doing the things around the house, and I hate to make that even sound like whatever, but it's the fact of the matter. Truth. I'm cooking, I'm getting the kids ready, I'm coaching, I am working.
Women consume media differently than men. And the WNBA needs to meet them where they are if they want to capitalize on the groundbreaking situation that they're being handed right now.
And they absolutely have the opportunity. I mean, let's think of it. They're in right now, and as someone who, like, I played competitive sports. I played competitive softball, and I'll watch softball. Simple as that. So there are girls coming out now who played basketball, who did it competitively, who it was their life, and they're not at that high level, so they would watch it.
And truthfully, there's way more than Caitlin Clark that's in this, if you want to call them freshman class, this rookie class, going to WNBA that are incredible. And on top of that, you got some girls that are about to come out of college next year that are just as amazing. Maybe not. Debatable. Either way, you have some absolute stars.
But I think also the NBA lifting that rule has changed it completely. Not NBA, I'm sorry, NCAA.
Oh, the NIL.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I agree with you. But again, it's a media problem to me. You gotta sell tickets, whether those are virtual, in person, you gotta sell. That's it.
Sell, baby, sell.
It's an entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that.
All right. On to the next.
Oh boy. This is the one that'll put you through the roof.
Dude.
Most breaking pitches at the youth level simply follow trajectory and don't actually break. Specifically in softball, rise balls don't rise.
Where did you get this? Where did you get this?
That's from physics, baby.
Ugh. Dude, if I knew we were going to talk about science, I wouldn't have even hopped on. Oh, God. I don't agree. This is such a gray area. This is such a gray area.
It's not gray.
Oh, it's absolutely gray.
It's black and white.
It's not. Science is not black and white. Can you edit that out?
That actually might be my favorite quote from all of our entire podcast. Science is not. I guess there are kind of shades of gray to it. But
are you saying that a rise ball is just a rising fastball?
No. What I'm saying is a rise ball is a ball that is thrown on an upward trajectory. It is not that it rises through magic.
No, I think magic does exist in the rise ball. And I will say
so I'm going to stop you there.
Okay. Listen, if that was it, there wouldn't be a specific way to do it. You know, you need like specific amount of speed, the way that you spin that ball, push it, the way that you hold it, the way that you spin it with your fingers, the way that your arm gets long and the way that you have to throw it. So yes, it does go on a higher trajectory. But sorry, I say that because I know that word.
It's just thrown at an upward angle.
It's not though. It's not because that fit. Like, is it sometimes? Yes, but if you're doing it the correct way, it does not go at this. It does not go at a high angle. It's supposed to start lower, go straight, and then go up.
Okay, so here I am holding my Coke Zero. Okay. It is at rest.
Yeah.
How can I make this go upwards?
Okay. You push it up. But that's
so a force has to be acted on this particular body because mm-hmm. it's at rest.
Yeah.
And a force needs to be acted on it for it to go up.
Yeah.
As soon as that ball leaves my hand,
mm-hmm.
I cannot act upon it with any forces. The only force that changes the trajectory of a ball, whether it's a baseball or softball, is called the Magnus effect,
mm-hmm.
which is when you have the spinning ball and the laces that create, you know, issues or create high and low pressure areas with the laces. Sorry, that's a weird explanation for it. But
can you say that one more time?
So as the laces spin,
mm-hmm.
there's something that happens called the Magnus effect.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is as the laces kind of push air around it,
mm-hmm.
and you get high and low pressure areas depending on the way it's rotating.
Yeah,
and the ball is going to naturally push towards the low pressure area.
Okay,
which is what happens with a breaking pitch. I can spin that ball backwards as fast as I want.
Mm-hmm.
I can never get that ball to push upwards because there's no force pushing the ball up.
Okay.
That's against gravity because the gravitational effect is much stronger than the Magnus effect.
Mm-hmm.
So I can put the ball on an upward trajectory and I can spin it, which is going to make it look like it's kind of curving up. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't actually curve up. It is just sent on an upward trajectory. But you have an optical illusion that it looks like it does.
Okay.
Hot take.
No, I think you just wanted to show everyone that you know this scientific way of how these balls break. I'm going to break your balls in a second.
Wow.
Sorry, you asked me this question and then...
Send help.
Yeah, no, listen. Can you go back to what's the original question?
That in really my hot take is that in youth sports, most breaking balls.
Not in youth sports.
That's what I said. That's
baseball, softball.
Yes, in baseball and softball, in youth baseball and softball.
Okay.
Most breaking balls don't break. And that is simply because the children, until they're really past puberty, don't have the speed and spin rate required to actually make those balls break.
So you're not saying across the board, you're saying in terms of how old they are.
Yes. But I'm saying in softball in specific, rise balls don't rise. They are sent on an upward trajectory.
Even at the highest level.
Even at the highest level, because you can't beat gravity.
Maybe you can't, Jim Tarrant.
Maybe Montana Fouts can. Listen, I don't know.
You don't know about my vertical leap.
Oh, I've seen your vertical leap.
You have no idea. You have no idea. I don't know. I think that what you're saying is kind of convoluted. I think that, I mean, if you want to talk scientific, sure. You can talk that and have that perspective. But I feel like especially in youth sports, the ball moves. Whether it does the break that you're talking about, I mean, I don't really have much. I can teach how to do these pitches, but I mean, I'm not really sure the answer that you're kind of looking for, but.
I'm not looking for an answer. It wasn't a question. It was a statement.
Well, good for you. But I think that at the younger level, we're looking for movement and they're learning how to do that.
Which I think what they're learning at a younger level is spin, which gives, which depending on the type of spin gives a certain optical illusion to the trajectory that they're throwing the ball on, which I think is important for them to learn because once they gain velocity and they gain more strength to put more spin on it, that's when they can actually move the ball.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can move the ball already, but there are more forces acting on the ball if there's not as much spin or not as much speed.
That's an agree to disagree.
Oh my God. You love yourself. All right. In Deptford, New Jersey, they have implemented a rule that if you mistreat an umpire, you need to volunteer to be an umpire for 3 games before you can come back to the complex as a fan. Well, I'm asking this as a question. Sorry. Is this an effective way to stop unruly parents?
Yes.
Really? Hands throw it down, out there. Yes.
I think we discussed this with Jess when she was on.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I think it I think umpiring or coaching or whatever, well, obviously coaching doesn't give a good enough perspective, but I think umpiring for sure gives people perspective on what it takes and what it is to be an umpire. And so, yeah, I think if this is like, hey, you want to mouth off, you want to chirp to the refs? Sure. Now go do it. If you think you can do a better job, have at it.
I'm just trying to think of how they can enforce it. How do they enforce? You know what I mean? Like, what's going to happen? All right, so the umpire throws the parent out of the game, says, you know, you can't come back and watch a game until you umpire three games. That's what it says here. So
I think it's fairly easy to enforce because obviously you're not going to go have that person umpire a 10U game or a 12U game. You're going to have them do a 6 or an 8U. Mm. And that's it. They're doing a 6U or an 8U game. And the league just says, you're banned from this complex until you are in our schedule three times for umpiring. Mm. And I think just the existence of that rule is going to get people to think twice.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you, especially when, like, you know, it's that you get that one person that's going to actually have to do it, and then everyone's going to watch what happens with that.
Well, that's the thing. You're going to have one person that gets busted for it, and then it's you only have one person to manage to make sure that they umpire their three games or whatever, and then all the other parents are like, oh Jesus, like I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to umpire those games, you know, and so they're going to shut their mouths.
Yeah, I wonder if it comes with. Some kind of, I think it should come with some kind of, you know, online class. Like you need to pass this course and then do these to be able to do it.
I think that's another great way of doing it. I think an online course for parents. Maybe we found ourselves a little, little opportunity, little, you know, parents, sport parents, university or something. Would be great for a lot of leagues to have to talk about being a parent, what it means to be positive, how you can support your kid, how not to act, how to act.
Yeah. You know? I wonder if too, having that course, it says like, listen, now you know. Yeah. Now you know, so you're expected not to, and if you do, these are the stakes.
Yeah.
We're going in that direction. It's as simple as that. 100%. We're all, you know, all sports are going in that direction.
Well, you know, and that comes with a larger conversation of like, you know, as a society.
Yeah.
I zoomed out real far there. As a society, how do we enforce or how do we handle what should be shared ideals? You know, like I know that I shouldn't be yelling at the ref. You know that you shouldn't be yelling at the ref, but how does person C know that?
Yeah.
You know, they have to be told sometimes
because
they grew up were in a different area or a different household or whatever, and it was okay.
Yeah.
But it is now not okay. And I think we've all made that clear. I love what we've seen in soccer, where at our youngest daughter's games, they are walking the kids across the field with the refs and standing in front of the parents, and the ref reads basically a, you know, don't be an idiot parent card.
Yeah.
And all the kids are standing there. So it's like, yeah, if you're going to yell at the ref after you just had that talk and your kids are staring at you, You're something.
And everyone experiences that experience together. So the parent next to you, the parent down, couple camping chairs down, everyone knows that you were there and you experienced that. And you're being held accountable for it.
Sure.
So that's huge. And I think that needs to happen in more sports. I know remember with softball, with the high school, the umpires would read off the card and it would be like no taunting, baiting of opponents. But that was to the teams.
That was just to the teams.
Yeah, and that needs to be.
They still do that.
But it needs to be to the audience.
It as needs well. To be to the audience now. Yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. You do have to address that. But
yeah.
I'm on hot takes.
I'm out of hot takes. I'm still What's feeling up? The Coke Zero hot take, but I'll let that one go. I'll move on with my day somehow.
I'm going to move on with my day because I'm motivated by this Coke Zero. Oh, God. Yeah. All right.
All right.
You got anything else to say?
No, I'm going to go. I had breakfast today already because it was the first meal of my day. And at one point, I'm going to have my second meal, which is going to be lunch. And it doesn't matter what time it is. Second meal.
Well, I appreciate that you had breakfast at the correct time because that's when breakfast is. So if you have any questions or I can just cut you off.
Dude, I should
like
just
that.
Put a mirror in between us so you could look at yourself and just be so proud.
I would love it.
I'm sure you would.
Anyways, if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, riddles,
limericks,
musings, anything you want to say, you can get in touch with us, Kerry, K-E-R-I, at thefieldhouseri.com. And I think this is it for episode number 7 of In the Fieldhouse with Coach Jim and Coach Kerry.
Toodaloo.